Today, we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello.
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine-free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Oh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Down in Cork, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were returned with far more seats and support. The green policies and actions were incredibly unpopular. Cycle lanes and blocking road building and new housing is not good enough. Kieran in Kilkenny says the Greens' carbon taxes during a cost of living crisis, no practical solutions for the environment, just taxes, taxes, taxes. No wonder they got wiped out. Well, not entirely wiped out, because they still have Roderick O'Gorman. And I wonder, we have in studio with us now Sarah Carey, columnist for the Irish Independent, Gary Murphy, columnist with the Irish edition of the Sunday Times and professor of politics at Dublin City University. And we also have Harry McGee, political correspondent of the Irish Times. But Gary, I'll start with you on that in the Greens. Does this mean that a new government, which almost certainly will be independent, supporting Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, will abandon the green agenda, or can they, because of European Union requirements?
I think it's the latter, Matt. They can't abandon it. And that begs the question, which independence will they approach in the first place? Because if it's going to be an independent government, and if Labour don't get involved, let's say, an independent supporting government of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, I should say, well, there is the danger that it drifts away from the sort of green agenda that the Green Party pushed so heavily. And to be fair, some progressive members of both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are entirely in tune with. We have the EU directives that have to be obeyed, or else we'll be heavily fined. And that's real money, to use the sort of the Apple quote, of the real money of the Apple billions. And the Greens aren't going away. Even if Roderick O'Gorman didn't hold on, I mean, they were wiped out in 2011 and they came back slowly, but they were back in government with 12 seats within a decade. And it's a global project, isn't it? So in that context, I just cannot see how we revert to a scenario of the sort of 1980s where you... No, obviously you're not burning smoky coal anymore, but to use that sort of metaphor, I just cannot see it. So in that context, and the both, I think, the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste are fully aware of the fact that green issues have not gone away, notwithstanding the demise of the Green Party.
There will be a problem for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in government against Sarah Carey, though, that they have promised to continue the derogation from the Nitrates Directive. That was a big thing, the Nitrates Directive, amongst farmers. And how are they going to be able to do that when Europe tells them what to do?
Yeah, and I was a bit nervous about this insofar as I think an independent wing will make a stable government. But this is the big issue that we need to keep an eye out for. And have the Greens done enough where they left enough targets behind them that are statutory that have to be met? And also they succeeded in making carbon reduction mainstream. So are there people in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael who will, in good faith, try to take on the rural independence? And I'm wondering, is there a genuine opportunity here for a green transition deal for rural Ireland? So if you take that nitrates directive. I did a piece a couple of months ago where I went down to a farmer down in Westmeath, 400 acres, a big farm, and he was telling me there's actually only about 1,000 farmers who are affected by that nitrates directive. Like, you could actually do some kind of a deal and take it on and sort it out. So I think a deal can be done, and will it be done in good faith with the green agenda in mind?
Harry McGee of the Irish Times, will there still be, do you think, for a new government, a commitment to try and move us all onto public transport? But even if that happens, will it be accompanied by a greater degree of road building than we've seen in the last 5 years? Perhaps less emphasis on things like cycle paths?
Well, I think they'll try to do both. It's not unusual for politicians to try to ride both horses home, Matt. And if we look at the nitrates derogation, for example, the politicians are telling us that they will keep the exemption while cleaning Ireland's polluted waterways. And to me, those two things are not possible to happen at the same time. I think the government will, if Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, if they dominate the new government to the extent that they look like they will, I think they will recommit to more budget towards roads. But at the same time, I don't think they're going to abandon public transport in its totality. I think there are big commitments in all the manifestos in relation to public transport, and not least the metro project for Dublin, which has been, you know, it's been planned for 20 or 30 years.
But Harry, could it be that they have to do both anyway because of our growing population, that you simply just have to put new roads in to deal with that, but you also have to put new public transport? Both will have to get the commitment.
Well, they certainly do, especially in the bigger urban areas. But they also need to fix the rural areas as well. They have to try to look at where models of public transport have worked in other European countries. If you go to Switzerland, for example, the post vans go to the smallest villages and have a regular service, and it seems to work over there. They're going to have to try to find new models to reach all of the population if they are serious about public transport and about reaching emission levels. But like a lot of things in Ireland, there's always the stultifying glacial pace of progress. As I was saying, the metro has been planned for over 30 years. And by the time we see metro, Matt, I think yourself and myself and maybe Gary might find ourselves in permanent residence at the same level as the metro trains as they're trundling past. You know, it could take another 20 or 30 years.
Speak for yourself, Harry. Okay. Susan in Cork says, I voted Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil again. I honestly think the other options were poor. And with the possible instability in the US for Trump being re-elected, it was better to stick with what we know. Sarah Kerry, is that what you think has happened for a lot of people, that they were maybe perhaps a little bit spooked by all of the talk of potential damage to the economy by a Trump government and decided, a bit like in 2007, not to risk change?
Yeah, and I think actually more than that, I think there was a general level of satisfaction with the current government, obviously helped by the cushioning effect of the corporation taxes that were used to protect people from inflation, which other countries haven't had the benefit of. But then that's a result of the 30-year policy for low corporation tax. So it's not something that just happened by fluke. And I think, and the other issue was that I think there was a lack of an alternative government as well. And this is something I might come on to, you know, when we're going to talk about government formation. You know, if you weren't going to vote for Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, if you were angry with them and you wanted change, well, what was your alternative? And Sinn Féin just hit that ceiling where there's just a majority of people who don't want to give them that chance in government. So that limited your options for alternative government, which isn't necessarily the healthiest thing. You know, it is important to have an alternative. But yeah, people were just fairly satisfied overall with the performance of the government. And I think that also contributed to the low turnout. You know, the people weren't angry. There weren't big passions. There's also a huge consensus about policy. There weren't big points of difference. So, you know, I think that all contributed to the 50%.
Yeah, there's not a binary choice here in Ireland, Matt, like there is in the UK, for instance. Tories are v Labour, or in the States, Republicans are Democrats. And the struggle, I think, for Sinn Féin, and we discussed it even as recently as last week, in the last few days of the campaign, was that the Sinn Féin changed the government message while, in one way, very attractive. I think once people looked at it and said, OK, Sinn Féin and who? The Social Democrats, into Labour, even the Greens, and then People Before Profit. And then we heard their intellectual guru on RT over the weekend on the television coverage say they were an anti-capitalist party, so they were different from everybody else. And Mary Lou MacDonald gave a very hesitant, oh, I think you should transfer to PVP candidates. Now, how that would play if she was to lead a government looking for foreign direct investment, nobody knows, I suspect, and she didn't know herself. So that alternative simply wasn't there. An alternative government of Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin might have been there, but Fianna Fáil, of course, wanted nothing to do with that, especially under the leadership of Micheál Martin. So change of government, it was an attractive and I think maybe an ineffective slogan, in that it got Sinn Féin to, what is it, 19% and 40 seats perhaps. But a lot of people might have said, no, I won't change the government, or I certainly won't change the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael part of it. Now, they're at 43%. We did way back, Matt, you'll remember in 2002 in the glory days when we were in even a different studio in Today FM, Bertie Ahern was getting 43% on his own for Fianna Fáil. They're where they were in 2016 when they made a little bit of a comeback after the wipeout of 2011. So they're flatlining percentage-wise. Their seat was at 48. They got 44 in 2016, remember. Then that ducked down to 38. So we're not talking a big, huge gain. Fine Gael have gone from 76 in 2011 to 35 in 2022, 38 today. So there is a, I wouldn't say a crisis for the main parties, but the stagnation I think must be worrying for them as well.
Harry McGee, what's the expectation as to how quickly a new government can be formed?
Not too quickly. I mean, the consensus is that the real negotiations won't really begin, Matt, until the new year. I know that Mary Lou MacDonald has made overtures to some of the smaller, not so small actually, anymore, centre-left and left-wing parties.
But sorry, Harry, why? There are dozens of votes behind where they need, or seats behind where they need to be. What's the point of it?
Well, I mean, I think the negotiation starts, and I think all of the party leaders have given commitments to speak to all other parties as well. There might be a possibility of looking at options in terms of having a left-wing bloc, and the left-wing bloc could be a left-wing bloc that operates in tandem in opposition. One of the criticisms that was made of Sinn Féin was that it wasn't, as Sarah was saying, that it didn't provide a feasible alternative government to the two big parties, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, and the party was criticised for not talking to other smaller parties in advance of the general election. In fairness to it, it did suggest to its supporters to transfer to the Social Democrats and People Before Profit. But that happened very, very late in the day, Matt, only a few days before polling. And one of the criticisms that has been levelled at Sinn Féin is that it should have done that much earlier. So, I mean, every party has given a commitment to speak to other parties. Whether it's going to amount to anything, of course it's not, because as Sarah and Gary were saying earlier, you know, there isn't a feasible route to government coming from the left side of Irish politics at the moment. But the real negotiations, i.e. those involving Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and if in the off chance, and I don't think it's going to happen, they don't reach an agreement between Fianna Fáil and other combinations, including Sinn Féin, won't start until the new year. I don't think we'll be hanging around until springtime for many months before we get a government form, like happened in 2020. It took several months before we had a government in 2020. I think it could be done during the month of January and perhaps into the first week or two of February, and then we will have a new government. And, you know, look, the figures are quite obvious. It's going to be a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael plus others government. That's the only feasible government that looks possible at present.
Tony and Shannon says, what would the results look like if we didn't have the PR system? Gary, it's impossible to tell, isn't it? Because we'd have, if we didn't have the PR system, if we'd single seat constituencies, we probably wouldn't have as many candidates running. Or even if we had a different voting system for multi seat constituencies, you don't know. It's impossible to tell, is it?
It is. And for all the complaints about this system, it is relatively proportional now. We know Fianna Fáil are going to get, I think, 27% of the seats on 22% of the vote. But look at the British election of just a couple of months back, back in July, Matt. Labour got 36% and they have a 200 and something seat majority. They have a whopping majority. And notwithstanding all the criticisms of Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves, my suspicion is that in about 3 years' time, when they're thinking of going back to the British electorate again, people will have forgotten the first traumatic 100 days or 200 days of this particular government in Britain. What would a PR, what would a first past the post system be like here? Well, Fianna Fáil tried to change it twice, Matt, 59 and 68. The electorate rebuffed them on both times and they had never gone back to try and change it. Again, there's often been talk about people like me and others about, oh, list systems, closed lists, open lists. The reality is, the Irish people know how to vote and they know how to use their vote for the most part in the polling booth. It's not actually that difficult, notwithstanding complaints every now and again. You vote 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 until really you don't care anymore is always my advice. Some people say you should go the whole way down. But look, the votes have been counted now. I just don't think there's any appetite for first past the post. Would it give you a stable government? Maybe, but maybe not.
It's very protective of polarisation. That's the big favour it's done for Ireland, is that people can let off steam by voting for smaller parties, but we still end up with a centre-ground.
Well, actually, that's what I was just about to ask you about, because Colm says the problem that the Greens has with that they took a hard line on things like carbon taxes, road upgrades and the Dublin airport cap. Irish people are by their nature centrists, looking for a middle ground on all issues, and that's why the hard line left, far right and Greens have all been rejected in this election. Now, that's an interesting point, Sarah, because all around the world, incumbent governments are being thrown out And yet the Irish have bucked the trend by keeping what is a centrist government, effectively. You have the two centrist parties. And I know there are people who try and categorise Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael as right-wing.
They're not right-wing. This is a left-wing country. And the centre has been pulled to the left over decades. And Fianna Fáil would argue they always were a left-wing party and always were a working-class party. This is a left-wing country. And you saw that, for instance, let me give you one aspect. Within the OECD, Ireland has booked another trend, not just in terms of keeping incumbents, in reversing inequality. Throughout other economies in the OECD, inequality is widening. In Ireland, before tax, Ireland is one of the most unequal countries in the OECD. And then we come in with one of the most progressive tax systems in the country and transfer cash from the rich to the poor, and we end up being one of the most equal countries. And that's why we vote the way we do. It works for most people.
I mean, I thought that was a very astute comment by the texter, Matt, that Ireland is pretty centrist. Sarah is right. There's more appetite for left-wing solutions. In other words, a bigger state. But there's certainly no appetite on the fringes of either far left or far right. Mm-hmm.
And just very briefly to Harry McGee, to you before we go to the break. Stephen O'Bray wants to know, will it be a rotating Taoiseach or between Micheál Martin and Simon Harris, or will it just be Micheál Martin if, and I think to add to this question, if, for example, Fianna Fáil ends up with 9 or 10 more seats than Fine Gael?
I think it will be rotating Taoiseach, notwithstanding the bigger gap between both parties. I think perhaps Fianna Fáil might get the lion's share of the ministries. They might get more senior ministries and a few more junior ministries to reflect their greater numbers. But I think the principle of rotating Taoiseach is fairly well cemented now. And I don't think Fine Gael will agree to go into government unless they get a share of that particular role.
Harry McGee of the Irish Times, thank you. Sarah Carey and Gary Murphy are staying with us, and we have more guests to join us after this. Okay, Lorcan Nine from the Communications Clinic has joined with Sarah Carey and Gary Murphy for our assessment of what has gone on in the general election campaign. Let's get back a little bit to the turnout issue, because Lorcan Nine, I was a bit confused by, we had Art O'Leary from the Electoral Commission in with us here last Thursday, telling us about not just nearly 450,000 new voters on the register since 2020, but about 100,000 people since the calling of the election, in a very tight window getting on. So what happened to all of them? Why didn't they vote?
Well, I think if you look at the turnout figures, I don't know if we can actually trust the exact turnout figure itself, because while they have increased massively, they have not decreased at all, and we've left with people on the register who aren't actually on the register. I had 4 ballots into my residence for different people coming through. So, I mean, the register itself isn't correct, but the trend, I suppose, is probably relatively correct, in that the trend
is downward. It looks like the lowest percentage since 1923.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's obviously not good. For me, I think a huge amount of their turnout was, and I know you were discussing it there just before it came on, the fact that the opposition kind of accepted the premise, really, that they weren't going to be able to form a government. Whether rightfully or wrongfully, they accepted that premise that was put on them by the media and put on them by the government, that there was no path, and they kind of just said, well, Fianna Fáil will ultimately talk to us, and nobody believed it, which meant there was a lot of votes there that voted last time that said, you know what, there's no actual path here. Well, I think if the opposition had put some form of vision, whatever about a pact, but just a vision that said, hang on, let me do the maths for you, let me tell you what we could get to, it's not too dissimilar to Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and then maybe there's a path. There was a lot of apathy. I don't necessarily know if that means support for government. I think it's apathy and error, we've no choice.
Another one, Lorcan here, that says, I think politics is too slow for a lot of young people, especially the younger generation. Change takes ages to be achieved, unlike referendums where the question is generally extremely binary, a yes or no answer to bring about immediate change.
Yeah, but sure, in the 70s and 80s, you had about 3 governments in about a year and a half. Do you know what I mean? So they weren't exactly the most patient electorate back then either. I think there's an element sometimes that people say, oh, the next generation. I don't necessarily buy that. I think it takes a while for you to be kind of become boring enough to be fully interested in politics. But other than that, I don't think it's necessarily a generational thing. But I do think if you look at the polling, it was the younger voters were more anti-government in the exit polling and polling consistently. And I think that those younger voters, who are probably less politically engaged, as all younger voters are in every country, didn't see a path for their vote mattering as much as they might want it to.
And actually, and that's why I think the Soc Dems and Labour, for the good of democracy in Ireland, should go into opposition and start today on building that left alliance, and not 3 days before the next election. Matt, I wouldn't mind making a couple of points about the independents, if you don't
mind.
Can
you just give me one second, because I just want to stick on this, just younger people, because Gary, as a university lecturer, professor indeed, is the person to ask on this. Listener says it was Xmas Day for most Dublin College students on Thursday night. They were all hungover on Friday. As it happens, I saw thousands of them on Camden Street as I was walking home on Thursday night in their Christmas jumpers. But they did have until 10 o'clock on Friday to vote. Young people do get over their hangovers by the time Friday evening comes around, don't they?
Well, a bit quicker than I suspect we do, Matt. yes, I was in Drumcondra myself, just coming from the university on Thursday evening, and it was full of Christmas jumpers, and as the university was. But I am very sceptical of this idea of, oh, the rain, or going home to vote because of living in Dublin, etc. I mean, attendance in lectures, I can tell everybody, is down significantly over the last, certainly since COVID. So I sometimes think we make too many excuses for people who don't vote. I mean, it's actually not that difficult to get yourself to your polling station and vote. We've gone 10% down, Matt, 70 to 59, 11% in just a decade. And that's
and there's a listener saying, you're forgetting a lot of asylum seekers could vote. What? Asylum seekers.
Well, they could vote in local elections.
You have to be an Irish citizen or actually a British citizen going back. And I think Arthur O'Leary explained this to Matt certainly last week. Irish or British citizens can vote, and that's going back since basically independence. Larkin's right about the register. Young people voting. I mean,
maybe they just don't care, because actually, if you're that 18, 19, 20, 21 age group, actually your life doesn't have that stake yet in society.
Transient.
That requires vote.
Yeah. Sarah, talk to me about the independents, did not do quite as well as perhaps had been expected.
Yeah, because I was afraid they were going to get up to 30, but it looks like they're about 23, 24, because I disapprove of independents. However, they've got one thing in their favour, which I do want to say. Look, it looks now like the way things will shape up is Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and some like-minded gene pool independents, all right? Now, Michael Healy-Ray is saying he'll vote for Kerry, and whoever gives him the best deal for Kerry, he'll back. Verona Murphy is saying whoever gives the best deal for Wexford, she'll back. And look, ransoming the whole country for the sake of one geographical area is, on the face of it, not a great idea. And also it incentivises the fragmentation. So when Gary is talking about that trend for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael going down, they're losing it to their own people who've just gone independent. But there are two points in their favour. One is the point I mentioned earlier, which is that it is protective of the centre. It does allow people to let off a bit of steam. But actually, you know, they're not going to the far right or far left. They are sticking with the centre. And in favour of what the Americans call pork barrel politics, which is this idea of giving earmarks and buying off a locality or a TD for their vote. Again, that actually does get you somewhere. The Tea Party in America in 2010 put a ban on earmarks for legislation. And that had the result that you couldn't buy off the fringe voters anymore. And that led to the increasing polarisation and chaos in Congress. Because now the likes of Joe Manchin or people like that no longer had a reason to back legislation. So, you know, if you pay off Wexford, if you pay off Kerry, but you get a stable government that overall is better for the country, maybe there's something to be said for that. Now, I don't believe that. I prefer to disincentivise them and not give them cabinet seats and have the centre-wing parties, you know, hold the ground. But if you do have to pay them off, that's a case for.
Okay, listener says, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael don't want young people voting as they will vote them out. The under-30s are not targeted by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. But Larkin and I say a couple of things to that. There's a couple of Fianna Fáil TDs at least who are in their 20s. Albert Dolan got elected at the expense of Anne Rabbit. He had his 26th birthday live on television yesterday. And
James O'Connor, he's only 25 and he's been elected twice.
Yeah, I think he's a little older than that now, 28 now, still he's another one in his 20s.
And when Lawless in Mayo was his mid-20s as well, isn't he?
Well, I drove my two sons to the polling station just to make sure. So parents have something to do.
But that would suggest that the main parties are actually targeting younger people. And it would also give rise to the suggestion, well, where are the younger people for the other left-wing parties if they want younger people to vote for them?
Yeah, some young independents have come through as well, you know, the
Barry Heenahan.
I mean, like, he's what, 25, 26, yeah. and has got elected as an independent, which I think is an absolutely phenomenal achievement. I know he had, you know, Finney McGrath's machine behind him, and that's very effective. They'll effectively do it by yourself at that age. But number one, by the way, I don't know if we know that the decrease in turnout this time is because under 30s haven't decided to vote. I think the apathy is going across the board here. You know, the people in 40s and 50s is the group that Sinn Féin made ground with last time, and therefore I presume have lost ground with this time. So, I mean, we can't necessarily just, you know, decide it's the under 30s straight away again here. Of course the parties are trying to engage with all of the voters. We have a system where you can get elected on 75 votes with a transfer. Like, they're trying to get absolutely every vote, so I don't buy that argument at all.
Okay, another listener said, my son is in UCD. He was out on Thursday night in Camden Street. I probably passed him, so. He voted in Kenmare, County Kerry at 9 p.m. on Friday, his first vote. Sarah Carey, all the political parties had to get 40% of the candidates to be women if they were to qualify for state funding, and yet it looks like we may have less than 25% of the Doyle seats to be filled by women.
Yeah, the gender quota can only do so much. You know, it can get them on the ballot paper, but it can't get them elected. And it'd be very interesting, say, maybe if one of Gary's students did a study now in the coming weeks, how did the gender quota affect candidate selection? You know, and were seats lost? Particularly by Fine Gael, for example, because, you know, a woman was put on the ballot paper and maybe was she not given a fair chance. However, in the long term, a pipeline is being created because they are coming through from the local authorities, from the local elections. And I think over time that will improve. But I do have one gripe against the gender quota, which is that the rule says that there must be at least 40% of each gender running for the ticket. So I think the Greens nearly lost their funding on the gender quota because they had too many women, and I think they had to remove a woman. So you have to have 40% of men as well, and I'm a bit raging about that because I think if there's going to be a bit of inequality reversed, you know, why can't we have a bit of that? So it was an interesting little trick for
parties. Last question in this section to you, Lorcan Nine. Has there also been a change in the way that the parties managed to secure votes, in that those who had good social media campaigns, such as the Social Democrats, perhaps won seats unexpectedly?
Yeah, you're going to have to look at that. I think one of the things that we did see in the campaign was, I think some of those parties, centre-left parties, were very targeted in their social media campaigns and the social media spend. I think Labour really, really focused in on three or four seats, and Marie Sherlock being one of them. So they were clever with their spend on social media. But I don't think it is just social media engagement that, again, drives these new parties coming through. I think, I mean, if you look at Fianna Fáil's vote, I mean, that's ground game, really, when it comes down to it, isn't it? I mean, so, like, it's find your voters wherever you can, communicate them as many ways as possible, but there's lots of candidates who didn't get elected who'd fair social media followings as well.
Okay, I just asked you one last one. I'm going to put it to you, Gary. John in Dundalk says, I've seven nephews under the age of 35. Not one of them voted, didn't see the point, was their point of view. Should we have any sympathy for somebody who decides that they don't want to vote? If you don't want to use your vote...
I have no sympathy for any of those seven people. I would have much more sympathy if they all went and voted. And if you're disgruntled with the government, I mean, there is an opposition. It might not be able to form a government, but it is there. And that was the Sinn Féin slogan, change the government. So they had an opportunity and they didn't use it.
And another one, my daughter is 21. Herself and five other students are in Spain on their Erasmus year. They were raging not to be able to vote. Unfortunately, the 3 weeks from the calling of the election to the election date didn't leave them enough time to be able to arrange to vote by post.
Arthur Leary was on last week saying that students should have been able to register, but there was a very tight window, and if you weren't paying extreme attention, you probably lost that. So I would certainly have sympathy with those kids on Erasmus.
But we need to be
a bit more proactive on postal voting, and I think Art said that to you last week, Matt. So I think we should expect changes over the next few years to make it easier for people who are generally can't get to a polling station to actually cast their vote.
Of course, the most controversial story potentially would have been the election had it happened of Gerard Hutch, the career criminal in Dublin Central. We'll be discussing that when we come back. So Sarah Carey and Gary Murphy have stayed with us, but we're joined by criminologist Trina O'Connor. Trina, thank you very much for joining us, because we want to talk about what nearly happened, and that was the near election of somebody who is regarded as a career criminal, Gerard Hutch. We've been talking for years about the Hutch-Kinahan feud, which has taken so many years, and it isn't entirely possible that unless things hadn't changed in the way that he could have been in the last few counts, he could have been elected. I say this, a lot of people in the country are familiar with the constituency of Dublin Central, only for maybe for doing things like walking to Croke Park or going to the Three Arena to see a gig or whatever. But if they do look at what they see, they'll see an awful lot of social deprivation, they'll see an awful lot of dereliction, and they'll see the need for an awful lot of change. But why would the people of the constituency have thought that Gerard Hutch could have brought them positive change when he has been associated with people who have brought an awful lot of crime and drug addiction to that area?
Okay, so some people are, I've seen some commentary, people saying it's a protest vote. I don't accept that it's a protest vote. I think that for the people that came out and voted for Gerry Hutch, I think realised the power of his, if you want to, in inverted commas, call it a celebrity status that he has. And I think that one of the things that Gerry Hutch has done in this election has shone a light again on that area, because we're all talking about it. Globally, people are talking about it. And I think some of the arguments around the years that it has been neglected as an area have come back into the conversation again. I think it's interesting in that central area that while Fianna Fáil now look like to be the main party in government, they didn't get a TD elected there. And I know Mary Fitzpatrick has gone five times, I think, and she's a wonderful servant for that area, but she didn't get elected also. So I think that when you talk to people down there on the ground, which I do often, they felt that Gerry was somebody who could bring a different perspective into the Dáil, also because of his background. So there's a relationship, or a relatability to the people down there because of his upbringing, that they would have a lot in common, that he could speak to a lived experience that they have within
the Dáil.
Hold
on a second, hold on, sorry. Their lived experience and his are somewhat different. This is a man who no longer lives in the constituency, who has a big house in Clontarf, who also spends a lot of his years in Spain, who's on bail at present in Spain because of alleged money laundering. This is a man who paid cab over 1.5 million quid back in the 1990s, who has been linked, who has criminal convictions, although the last is 1989. His living experience is entirely different from all of the people who voted for him, surely.
Totally agree with you. But for them, his upbringing and his childhood and where he came from, there is a commonality there. I think also what we need to remember is that the people that turn out to vote in that area is very low traditionally, and there was a slight increase.
Up to, I think, 52% in the constituency, up 1%.
Up from 51. Yeah.
So that percentage that came out to vote for him. And I also think some of the narrative around some of the work that he does in the area, you've kind of got this almost Robin Hood kind of fairy tale around people like Gerry Hutch in a lot of communities. You see people mucking in and getting involved as well in community resources like his boxing club and that kind of thing.
Yeah, Sarah Kerry, do we have a weakness in this country for so-called Robin Hood type figures? And I'm being very careful here and now I say, but I think this goes across all social classes, rural and urban, that if you're seen to be somebody who is outside of the system, who is sort of made money by your own self, we pay undue deference to people if they're seen to be good in their local community.
Well, I can give you two examples of that. Politically, there would be Mick Wallace in Wexford, who, you know, built a political system base. He was very involved in soccer, wasn't that his big thing? And then non-politically, maybe somebody like JP McManus, who is a tax non-resident but gives a load of money locally, especially that big donation he made to the GAA, and therefore is seen as something of a hero. And so I think we don't quite have that ability to look at things in the abstract. You know, we look at each person subjectively. But I don't blame anyone who voted for Hutch, really, in that constituency. And I judge them a lot less harshly than I would middle-class people ditching the Greens because of bloody cycle lanes, you know, which, you know, is such a petty little thing to be annoyed with somebody about. I think it is interesting that we all thought Pascal Donoghue's budget surplus was the most important thing he contributed to the country, when actually it was his electoral surplus ended up making a significant difference. But I think it's been a good thing that, fine, he didn't get in, thank God, but he
It has shone attention on that constituency, and they deserve to have something.
But hold on, has nothing been done for that constituency? Because didn't, in fairness, Enda Kenny make it a priority of his when he was in government? Mm. Haven't there been things? I heard Pascal Donoghue on radio yesterday going through a list of initiatives in the area, such as, for example, as you walk to Croke Park, there is one absolutely outstanding looking new community health centre that has been built for the area.
Yeah, and remember, Matt, that's the constituency of Tony Gregory and the famous Gregory deal with hockey in the early 1980s, and there has been a lot done, but there is still a lot of disadvantage as well. That's the key point.
I think.
My old sociology professor in UCC, Paddy O'Carroll, wrote a famous article many years ago, Matt, called Cute Whores and Sneaking Regarders. and the idea was basically that there are a lot of people who have a sneaking regard for those who break the rules, whether this is tax evasion, tax avoidance, or sheer criminality. I think that is probably still with us to some extent. And it was emblematic of the vote Gerard Hutchings got, just over 3,000 votes, and within a couple of counts, and people saying they would know and transfer him, he was at 5,000 votes. Yeah. When people like me thought he would actually win the seat. Now, what happened, of course, was the party transfers helped Marie Sherlock.
But it was real education in the system, wasn't it, to see the benefit of voting down your ballot paper, so that if your candidate gets elected, that your second preference has a real impact.
Like we talked about this and how far you should go down the ballot, because you can go down the ballot to make sure that people you don't want to get in certainly won't be elected. That's why I say until it makes no difference to you. And it obviously made a lot of difference, those who wanted to vote Gerard Hutchings and those who wanted to keep him out.
I think when we're talking about resources for that area, and I worked in that area for a long time, a lot of resources were put in that area after the Kinnenhutch feud. And I think that that's kind of the argument that the people that live in that community speak about, that something sensational has to happen for attention to be paid. And that's wrong. It is our capital city. What is the plan for it? There's a lot of transient people living there. What's the housing plan for that area? How are we building a community in that area? Where's the cohesion if people are moving in and out so quickly? So that's, I suppose, where the people down there are coming from. It's like it has been gentrified in parts, and then other parts have been deprived. So you have a very disconnected community down there as well, and you have people just moving through.
And I think as well, I think there are about 400 drug and alcohol related deaths every year, and there isn't a word about them. And if they were dying on the roads, there'd be an awful lot more.
And a lot of these happening in this particular area, because an awful lot of the people are centred in that area, perhaps brought in if they're looking for... Yeah. For various treatments, methadone treatments,
drug
whatever.
Addicts, and they're just
it's we criminalize them rather than treating it
exactly.
As a health issue.
The jails are full of people who have a drug addiction and a mental health condition, and it's wrong.
We do, and the national conversation last year came back, and the Citizens Assembly came back about treating it as a health condition, taking a health led approach. And I know Fianna Gael and Fianna Fáil are opposing parts of that. So we've got these two parties coming back into government, and we still don't know if they're going to implement the recommendations of the Citizens' Assembly.
But just to finish, Gary Murphy, for all of the people who voted for Gerry Hutch, enough people voted for other candidates to make sure he wasn't elected.
Yeah, the centre held. It's a great phrase Pascal Donoghue was always using, and it held in his own constituency, where you have the leader of the opposition, Mary Lou MacDonald, a senior cabinet minister, and then two people on what we might call the centre left, Gary Gannon and Anne-Marie Sherlock. And not unlike the result across the electorate, with the exception, as Trina said earlier, of Fianna Fáil. I think the ultimate story of this election, Matt, is that old Ireland and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael is going down hill, but it's still very strong.
Holding on. Gary Murphy, Sarah Carey and Trina O'Connor, thank you all very much. Thank you for all of our contributors over the weeks of the general election campaign.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Today we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello!
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine-free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Oh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.